McLean Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome to a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Let me tell you what I did over the past 2 days. It's interesting. It's interesting. I followed Taxman's remains around Mobile, through the old city of Mobile. It's interesting. Taxman's obituary finally came out. Taxman is one of our regular listeners and would always give us advice. And I thought, you know, I really want to go just say goodbye the last time. Just see if I hear his voice anywhere. We're going to miss it. So I'm going to follow him around, trying to figure out. And his obituary came out. It's an interesting obituary. You should read it sometime. Jim Oates, James Oates. And Taxman, I've known Taxman for many years. Taxman has known me better than I've known Taxman, as I have discovered. He's followed me for many years, followed things I've said, paid attention to what I was doing, and I paid attention to his advice often enough, but I didn't know all the things. Taxman was born up in Whistler. And sort of following Taxman back up to Whistler in my mind, I think, what an incredible community. What an incredible place. It reminded me of what Mobile was like. If there were a place for a city, one of the most beautiful little places for a city, one of the most beautiful little places of Mobile, completely forgotten, almost completely forgotten. A lot of people can claim their heritage there is Whistler, Alabama. Beautiful little place, beautiful little houses, still intact in many cases. A beautiful little community. That's where Taxman was born. He went to Spring Hill, went to school in Mobile, went to Spring Hill College, and set up a business in Daphne. Was responsible for buying up a lot of the longleaf, I think, for International Paper over the years. And then had his own tax business, his own accounting service for a long, long time. So I wanted to visit with Taxman one last time. There was a service they announced over in Daphne at the Catholic Church there, where Taxman was a very stout, would be the word, a very regular and serious member of that church. But I didn't go to that. I thought, you know, I'm going to meet the entourage at Catholic Cemetery, which is where he was going to be interned, inurned. His ashes at Catholic Cemetery. I don't know if you know where Catholic Cemetery is. And I followed it through the streets of Old Mobile back to this place called Toulmanville. And that silky air. Do you remember that? Do you remember what Saturday was like? The storms were coming in. Everybody's saying, oh, man, the weatherman says, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm listening and I'm thinking, gosh, what beautiful air. What incredible air. This soft Mobile air that just sort of surrounds you. I mean, you feel the air when you walk through it. It's not too hot on these January days. But you feel the air. You feel like the air itself is kind of a presence around you. And I'm walking through Old Catholic Cemetery out there on Martin Luther King Avenue. And thinking about the names, as I always do, and thinking about what was this place like when this Catholic cemetery was here. And this place was a great longleaf pine forest in these beautiful, slowly rolling hills that just sort of rise and fall like small waves all the way back up to Citronelle. And all of that was this incredible longleaf forest, and there were people living there, and the Choctaws were there still, and the Alabama were there, the Alabama people whose names we've almost forgotten. Maybe the great fish eaters, the famous fish eaters from up between the rivers. Maybe they were there too. all sorts of people assembled there in that little area just north of Mobile, sort of trying to figure out what's going to happen to us all. What's going to happen in this transition? What's going to happen when the under the longleaf forest when things begin changing? Because they had lost their communities, they had lost their tribes, and there was, right in the middle of it, there's this Catholic cemetery, and I'm walking through it, and I'm looking at the names. And the names are very interesting. They're not, you know, there's some names that were familiar to me from Mobile nowadays. The names that I said, oh, yeah, there's their family. There they are. But there's so many names. And the biggest, what's always strange, there's Admiral Sims. Everybody knows Admiral Sims. There's his grave. But the biggest and most impressive mausoleums and above ground features of that cemetery, the ones that had been there the longest, they're not names anybody remembers anymore. They're not names that, I don't even know if there are any of their relatives left in Mobile anymore. I certainly don't remember encountering them. I don't see them. I just don't have any encounter with them anymore. It's very interesting. We think of old Mobile as sort of, well, it must have been what was here right before us. Or it's the people who are older now and wealthy now and seem to control things. But it's interesting because Old Mobile is much older than all of that. It goes back through many names, through many people. And somehow Taxman is making me run through all this. And I'm waiting there at Catholic Cemetery in this air, waiting for Taxman's remains to show up. And the water from the south wind is beginning to pour over the causeway. And apparently the folks over in Daphne think, yeah, you know, I don't know if I want to go to Mobile. I don't know if I want to take that parade over to Mobile. Let's cancel it. So they canceled the graveside service. Didn't know about that. Didn't know they had. That's okay. Because Taxman led me there. To that incredible place in Catholic Cemetery among the camellias and the remnants of the longleaf and the live oaks that were part of Old Mobile. And he made me think about this place and the city and what it has been and how long it's been here and how the people have changed dramatically and how they've changed this city and what that means to all of us. Sometimes I think the successes of a city and the failures of a city and its people over many, many years, even though that city changes, those successes and failures, they could be helping us create a future that is better than the one we have now. A future for us that's better, that maybe makes us better gardeners, that maybe makes us better citizens, that maybe helps us to live with this land in a way that we don't destroy the oysters, we don't destroy the fishery, we don't destroy the land so that it can't grow anything anymore, we don't destroy the forest, and maybe we're better off as a result of it. But sometimes I think you have to explore. You have to explore that old city. You have to explore all of those successes and all of those failures. And you have to think about the names of people that have been forgotten and understand that they are forgotten, even though they thought they held the keys to the kingdom in those days. They don't anymore. And those little names that didn't have much authority, sometimes they're the ones that made the city what it is. Sometimes they're the names that survive. It's interesting stories. Exploring where you are, exploring the city, exploring this place, thinking about what it was like, not just when you were young, but back to all the people that have tried and been successful and failed here in whatever ways they succeeded and failed. It's an interesting study, something we should do more. Taxman reminded me of that today and yesterday and the day before. Thanks, Taxman. Hey, we got lots to talk about today. We got to talk about your gardening. Listen, this weather is just incredible for starting seeds. Let's talk about it.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue dick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to the red dirt girls in a red dirt town. Me and Lillian, just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David Hubble read Taxman's obituary, which we've been talking about this morning. Taxman led us on a wild goose chase through the history of Mobile, and it was a wonderful chase. Thank you, Taxman. It was a lot of fun. Going back into the history of Mobile, which I did through Taxman's obituary and through following his remains, trying to Catholic Cemetery, where they never arrived, but all of his memories did. Really a memorable experience walking through there. Hey, David read the obituary. Let me just tell you this story. David read the obituary and noticed, as I did, that Taxman was ever the accountant. He accounted for the cost of every year of his education in that obituary. It was just a remarkable thing. He said, I went to this grammar school, and this is how much it cost me per month. And then I went here, and this is how much it cost me per year. And then I went to Spring Hill, and this is how much it cost me. You know, why in the world is he doing? David, I don't know if you noticed, towards the end of the obituary, he said, I'm leaving my estate, and I'm sure Taxman wrote the obituary. Nobody else would have had the talent to write that. And right there at the end, he said, I'm leaving my estate. Payback time, he says, payback time, the language of an accountant. Payback time to education. And he did. He left his estate to the educational programs of the Catholic Church. Hope they use it well. I hope they use it well. What a great man. Questions this morning. I started my tomato seedlings. This is the question, and I'm working with our zip whip, so I can't see everything. If I missed some of your questions this morning, please send it to me again. We got a funky little program this morning. I started my tomato seedlings in pine bark, like Taxman said, yeah, but they get so leggy. Last year they just collapsed because the stems got so long. Let me talk about this. When you plant in pine bark, and particularly when you're planting seedlings, you want to plant, I would go ahead and plant your seedlings in a soil mix that's been developed, unless you're really good at it, particularly for seedlings, use a soil mix that you get from, anywhere. I love the soil mix that we get from down at Shore Acres. It's one of the great things for starting seeds. It's got a lot of pine bark in it, mostly pine bark, got a few other things, but it's been filtered so that the fines are right, and it's got a little bit of lime in it, which is good, and a little bit of nutrients, which helps a lot of people. But listen, your seedlings don't get leggy, and this is a great time to talk about this. Your seedlings aren't going to get leggy because of the seedling mix. Your seedlings are going to get leggy because they're looking for sunlight. It's like they're leaning up and they're saying, hey, where's the sunlight? I can't find it. Let me get a little taller. And they get taller and taller and taller and taller. There's another reason seeds get leggy. Besides the fact that they can't find the sunlight, and that is that temperatures can sometimes cause seedlings to get leggy. This particularly happens to us in late summer when we're starting things like broccoli. And the broccoli grows a little fast. It gets a little stemmy, even regardless of how much sunlight it gets. It's just one of those things. It's because of the high night temperatures. I won't go into the details. But let me say that leggy plants have nothing to do with the soil. They have everything to do with temperature and sunlight, and mostly sunlight. So what I'm going to suggest this time of year is you look at next week. Have you looked at the forecast for next week? If you don't think tomatoes like growing in 75-degree weather, you've missed it. So don't put your tomatoes, don't leave your tomatoes inside. Next week, and I think this was probably the cold, one of the colder nights was last night, and it only got down in the 50s. I mean, just 59, which tomatoes would easily. Put your new tomato seedlings outside. Let them get the sun. Let them get the wind. That wind is going to stiffen them up. It's funny. You know, it's like, seedlings are like people. When people just lay around all the time and they don't ride their bicycles, what happens to them? They get kind of flabby. They get kind of weak. And they kind of, you know, they can't stand upright anymore. Yeah. Same thing happens to tomato seedlings. When they get a little bit of pressure from that wind, they actually develop resistance to the wind, and that helps them to stiffen up and get more muscular. I know that sounds crazy, but it's just pretty much what happens. They get muscular in response to wind, and that air circulation is going to be really good. So let me go on with this. Let me add this one more thing. One more thing. Make sure your seedlings get sunlight this week. What a great time. Friday, I looked at the forecast and I said, man, I am not going to let this week and a half of weather pass. It's going to be great for germinating every seed I got. The tomatoes are going to love it. Let me get these things out as quick as I can. There's a cold spell coming. I want to get as much done as I can before about the 20th of January. About the 20th of January, it's going to get a little chilly again. But then it'll warm up again. You know, we already got the mist of Mardi Gras going out there. Spring is very close here on the Gulf Coast. Really just a month away. But start those seedlings now and give them some sunlight. Hope that helped. I had a couple of other callers. Let me see if I can get to them here. Ooh, they disappeared. Beth. Yeah. Beth, what did Beth want? Charlie, can you read that?
Yeah, she wanted to know about her, and I can't remember exactly how to pronounce it.
Kogan grass. Kogan grass. And what did she say?
Other than pulling it up, is there any other way to control it? She's been doing that for the past 2 years.
Beth, if you figure an easy way to deal with Kogan grass, you're gonna make a lot of money.
I've been a fan of goats forever.
Well, and it's a tough one. Kogan is tough, and it is. I've got it in my beds. I wonder what to do about it. Here's the strategy, Beth. It does have. If you only pull it once, if you only pull it up once, you won't have succeeded in doing much. If you don't pull it up once, it's just going to get worse. So what do you do? Make sure you follow up. Pull that Kogan as best you can. 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, when the new ones emerge during warm weather, pull it up again. Because each time you pull it up on a quick rotation like that, before it has chances to develop leaves, when you pull it up, it wears out those roots slowly, because Kogan's got an incredible root system. But it does wear out the roots, and it can make a big difference. I virtually eliminated it in places just by doing that. And don't wait, as I have done in my yard, 6 months to weed it again. And in the places I did that, the Kogan has just eaten me alive. But make your plan now. Do it. Go ahead and pull it out now where you can see it. It's going to come back in spring, no question. No question. Pull it again, and then 3 weeks later, when it wants to come back again, pull it again, and you will make a big difference in what survives. It's that third pulling that really, really makes the big difference. You will never eliminate it, I don't think. Well, you could. You can eliminate it from certain spots, and that's one way to do it. If it's coming in from the grass, if you've got a lawn where lots of Kogan grass is growing, that can be a problem. But Kogan grass, if you mow it frequently, Kogan grass will disappear from the lawn, I will say. And by frequently, I mean once every couple of months. which is not too frequently, but don't let that Kogon grass get a hold when the other grass isn't growing. That's one of the secrets. And here's the third thing I'll tell you, Beth, with Kogon grass. Which maybe we need a better name for. We have pet names for it here in Mobile that nobody else uses or knows. Some people call it silktail grass because of the way the flowers look. But it's an invasive grass that's begun to take over. You see it all along the highways. It blooms crazy in spring. And it has an incredible root system. Keep pulling on it. But here's the other thing. I do this, and it can be very effective. Go ahead and pull it up now. I would just pull up as much as you can. And when it reemerges in about a month, in 1st February, which it will do, get a mitt, a painter's mitt, dip it in Roundup, and wipe it on those blades. Don't drip it everywhere. Just wipe it along the blades that come up, and it will translocate to the roots, and that can be much more effective on that second pull. Give that a try, and give me a call rattlesnake weed, very easy. We'll deal with rattlesnake weed here in just a minute. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of interesting questions this morning. Let's talk about starting tomatoes. Can we talk about it? Because it's a great time to... We had a great question this morning about leggy tomato seedlings. And this is a great time to start your tomatoes. If you've got a heat mat, that's really nice. But you know, this warm weather, put them on a warm porch, let them get some sunshine. Man, those things are going to love this weather. They're going to germinate pretty quick. They'll be pretty happy. Temperatures are going to be right for germinating things this week. If you want to, you can bring them in at night just to keep them a little bit warmer. But the days are going to be great for germinating tomatoes. Let me talk about starting tomato seedlings in a way that will help you. It is very possible to get leggy tomato seedlings. For a lot of reasons. One thing I recommend is don't start your tomato seedlings in a pot that's too big. Start them a little smaller, but if you've got a container. And don't start them in a real big one. Just start them in a small one. Start them in a small container, you know, maybe 2.5 inches tall, 3 inches tall. But let's say you've got a 2.5 inch tall container that you're starting your seedlings in. Only fill that container up halfway with soil. Firm it down kind of good. Just fill it up about halfway with soil, okay? Put your tomato seedlings in there. And then you can sprinkle a little bit of soil on top. But don't try to fill it all the way up. Just put fill half of that 2.5 inch container with soil. Just halfway up, put your tomato seedlings in. Sprinkle a little bit of soil on top of it, just enough. And then just push it, press it down a little bit. It will help those seeds to germinate more quickly. And one of the reasons it will is because you won't have as much soil to heat up if you've got a heating mat or if you're... It just trust me, it works really well, and you can. It's much easier to do that. I think your seeds are generally going to germinate more quickly, but it's when they begin to develop their second set of leaves. You know, they'll develop those early young leaves, but as they begin to develop their second set of leaves, then fill in the pot about 3/4 of the way up with a little more soil, and then fill it up a little more with about 3/4 more of soil. This doesn't work on every plant. It works on lots of plants, but it works really well on tomatoes. Tomatoes will, and if you do it in a container, just like I'm saying, it makes a ton of difference. You avoid, it even seems to for reasons that I can't explain, it even seems to stop the damping off problems. I think I kind of understand why. But it certainly helps you through that legginess. You hear what I'm saying? Start your seedlings. Don't start them at the top of the big pot. Start them about, and if it's a 2.5-inch pot, only fill it up about halfway. If you're starting them in a bigger pot, you got a big problem. Don't start them in too big a pot if you can help. Start them in a smaller container. It's a little easier that way. But always, whatever size container you put them in, leave some room for you to put a little extra soil in there as the tomato starts growing, and that can help. Sunlight and air circulation, a little bit of wind, these gentle breezes on days like today, it's going to be beautiful for those tomatoes. They really get muscular, they really stand up, and they do really, really well. Johnny, over in Foley, I'm listening. Johnny, what's up?
I got a question about overseeding.
Yes, sir.
I have overseeded a centipede lawn with winter rye. And this is my question. Other than having a green lawn all winter, which looks really nice, is there any advantage to centipede in the spring when it starts to come back and the temperatures go up and the winter rye starts to die out? Is there any advantage to the existing lawn?
You know, that's a very good question, and I think maybe. Here's a good hypothesis. Centipede has a terrible root system. It has a really incredibly weak root system, and it doesn't go very deep. You can try it. It doesn't go very deep at all, and it's very susceptible to these little soil creatures called nematodes. Now, rye is just the opposite. Rye has an incredibly deep root system, very deep, and it will just tunnel down, even into hard soil, it can tunnel down pretty well. It is very, it actually is very resistant to nematodes. It could serve as a host to them, but I think mostly it ends up killing nematodes and eliminating them. And so when you plant rye, it will compete with the centipede at a certain time of year. But it may be that the winter benefits of planting that rye are such that it overcomes the fact that the rye competes with the centipede early in spring. Now, one thing to think about, you definitely want to go ahead and keep that rye low and get it to go dormant as soon as possible when the centipede starts greening up. So when the centipede greens up, which is going to be usually, maybe April, 1st of April?
Yeah, around April or so.
Yeah, 1st of April, the centipede's going to start greening up. The rye is going to start, it's going to keep growing for a while. But you definitely want to keep the rye as low and as you can. And it's definitely going to compete with the centipede at that point. But it may be that the other benefits, which I think are probably real, outweigh the damage that occurs in April as the rye competes with the centipede.
But just okay. I'd heard there were advantages to it, and I just really didn't know. But the rye, I just broadcasted it out on top of the centipede, no soil preparation, no anything, no nothing. And as soon as we started getting some rain, boy, that stuff came out. It's
right.
Absolutely beautiful. I mean, it is like green.
Yeah, and I think centipede is one of the easiest grasses to overseed because it is a thin grass. It doesn't have much of a root system, so the seeds drop through really, really well, and they come up. One thing I always tell folks, just to give a little more context here, I tell people really worry about winter weeds, and I keep telling them, those winter weeds, they're probably the best thing in the world for your yard because they are bringing up nutrients out of the deep soil that centipede can't bring up at all. They're creating a deeper soil bed and a deeper topsoil. Actually, those winter weeds do. And they don't compete with the centipede, which is a summer grass. And as long as it's healthy during the summer, it'll be fine. So there it is. Just make sure you mow, particularly in April. Try to get that ryegrass to sort of calm down. When you get the first 85-degree days with some consistency, that ryegrass will just peter out, and the centipede will take over, which is about mid-April, late April. But that little transition is the only time you need to worry about it.
Okay. Well, thanks. I was curious about that. I sure appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. So, you know, have I got research to prove that that the ryegrass makes the centipede healthier? No. It is reasonable to believe it does, and lots of people have had experience with centipede and ryegrass, and the ryegrass seems to do just fine. My theory is it may actually do even a little bit better because of the rye. Someone said that if the winter rye stays very wet, it will cause the centipede underneath to rot, and yeah, I can imagine that happening. That's one of the things that it's one of the reasons I'm sure that can be true. That's one of the reasons you probably don't want the rye to get a little too long in the tooth. Let it dry out. If we get centipede in winter conditions, can rot out anyway. I've seen it happen regardless of anything else. It's just a weak grass. But yeah, I can imagine that happening. Keep the lawn mowed. Don't allow big clumps of ryegrass to sit on top of that centipede during the winter for long periods of time. You know what I'm saying? Keep it mowed evenly during the winter, and you'll be better off, I think, with your centipede. And you won't have that rotting problems. So Brian is asking me, did I talk about tomatoes enough? Did I? Are you guys ready with your tomato seeds? So I told you about how to start them, and you give me a call if you've got any more questions. Great question on spruce pine. I'm waiting for a call in on that. But do I prefer heirloom or hybrid tomatoes? What is the richest tasting tomato variety in your opinion? Yeah. So it's a funny thing. We have this idea that an heirloom tomato is somehow a more natural tomato. It isn't. An heirloom tomato is a tomato that basically hasn't had sex in 100 years or more. And that creates big problems. We'll talk about it. And we'll talk about hybrid tomatoes and why sometimes hybrid tomatoes have their own problems too. So do I prefer one over the other? Well, no. Let's talk about it. Let's understand exactly what we're getting into when we get back.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of interesting questions that I want to answer this morning. We might get back into this ryegrass thing just a little bit. Someone said they have a green fungus in their yard at Cypress Shores. You better let me look at that picture of that green fungus, and let me figure out exactly what it is. Or you can call me in and we can talk about it. I don't think it's a fungus. So we'll figure that out. Brian, we do need to talk more about the heirloom or hybrid tomatoes. I got a short little window here. And I don't think we got time to do it this hour, but hold on, because I want to talk about that. That'll be the first thing I talk about when we come back in the next hour, is hybrid or heirloom tomatoes. And my best answer is, which do I prefer? Neither. And, you know, heirloom tomatoes, it's important to understand, and this is significant. They hadn't had sex in a long time. And that creates, there's a lot of consequences for that. A lot of consequences for that, and I've been thinking a lot about that lately and how to fix some of the heirloom issues because of that. Hybrid tomatoes, they've had normal sex, just normal, except that it was controlled, and it depends on who's doing the controlling. That's the trick, isn't it? But we'll talk about that when we come back after the break. Meanwhile, I have this picture of a spruce pine from Joseph over at Marlow. And, Joseph, you want to tell me what's going on?
Yeah, good morning. It's just turning yellow. I've got three of them in my yard, and only one of them is turning yellow. And yeah. I'm really puzzled by it. The limbs feel very limber. It doesn't feel like it's dying, but is that a normal part of spruce pine development?
Yeah, it is in a way. Let me just say that. Let me tell everybody what spruce pine is. I love spruce pine. It is one of our most beautiful pines. There's not a pine I don't like. Virginia pine sometimes gives me the creeps, but I even get to where I like Virginia pine after a while. They're all beautiful in their own way. Spruce pine is particularly interesting because of the bark. It's not a spruce, it's a pine. It only grows in the southern part of the South, only along the Gulf Coast and a little area moving up onto the Atlantic. It's sort of a very distinctive Alabama pine, and we've got a lot of it here. Spruce pine usually grows best in mucky soils. Moist, mucky soils, often in floodplains, where the soils are pretty rich, or on rich clays, sometimes even in almost calcium-like clays, but often association with white oaks and beech and lots of other trees that like good, rich clay soils. And so we've noticed... And I used to panic because I would recommend people plant spruce pine, and they did, and they turned yellow. And I thought, did I do something wrong? Did I recommend that tree? And these trees were usually, they would often turn yellow even in the containers, and then they would turn yellow in the ground. And I would say, Tommy Dodd, Tom 3. You sold me these spruce pine. You told me they're going to do fine. And Tommy says, don't worry. They're going to work themselves out. So there's a thing about spruce pine when they're young. They seem to have a hard time adjusting to where they are. And particularly in dry soils, it looks like you're in a pretty dry place. They're going to have a hard time at first adjusting to where they are and getting the nutrients out of the ground. At some point, they seem to develop a relationship with the nutrients and with the soil creatures and whatever else, and they just get rid of the yellow and they just grow fine.
Okay.
So, yes, it is part of that. You don't always see it, but I'm not surprised you're seeing it there in Marlow.
Okay. Well, it's a beautiful tree. And I love the way the bark looks kind of like a live oak. But
yeah, and that's, it's the bark. It's sometimes called cherry bark pine is one of the names for it because the bark resembles cherry bark. It also resembles a spruce if you kind of know what a real spruce looks like up in the mountains. And so it's sometimes called spruce pine. It's not a typical pine bark, is it? And, here's the thing. Can I just say what I love about it? In spring, when that tree really starts growing, the new growth and the old growth is very fine needles. The needles are very dense, they're very short, and really beautiful. And the contrast between that young spring growth and the dark, dark, rich green of the old growth is just one of the most astonishing things you'll ever see. Just really beautiful. And but it's a great tree. Spruce pine, great tree. I love the form. It's not always a straight up and down tree. It can be kind of Christmas tree-like as it gets older. It often develops a little bit of a crook, but it's a really beautiful tree.
It is. Thank you so much for the information.
All right, Joseph, you call me if there's any more problems with that spruce pine.
Yes, sir.
One thing I will say about spruce pine is mulch it. It will definitely appreciate a thick mulch of leaves. That will really, really help. Go ahead and mulch it as far around those trees as you can. And I'm not talking about right near the trunk. It doesn't care what happens at the trunk. Don't let that mulch get next to the trunk. You want a 6-inch space between the trunk and the leaves. But I'm talking about put a big 6-foot mulch around those trees. You'll solve your mowing problems. You'll get rid of the weeds. The tree will grow faster, and it will add nutrients to the ground. It will be much happier, and it will get over that yellowness very quick. Elizabeth, tell me about this fungus in your yard.
Hey, Bill. It's only on like one side of the yard. I don't know. Did you get my picture?
Well, no, I haven't yet. I'm going to look at it during the break. We kind of have a funky computer system. I don't know what else to call it, but it just doesn't allow me to see it until I will. But I will look at it during the break. And Charlie's giving me that 1-minute signal that says I'm not going to be able to answer your question fully. But does it look? Does this fungus kind of grow where the soil is bare, and it just kind of looks like a kind of a turquoise green kind of color?
Yeah, it's a bright green, and it does grow where there's no grass.
And are there a bunch of trees there?
Yes, close around it. It's close to the edge of the yard.
So we're going to call this a moss, not a fungus.
Oh. Okay.
And it's either a moss or a lichen, and we'll talk about the difference between them. Elizabeth, what I'm going to do, I've got enough information. Let me come back as soon as this break is over. We're going to take a long news break and listen in, because I'll tell you exactly what to do.
You want me to listen?
You can just listen, I think.
Okay, so I need to hang up, right?
Well, if you want to hang on, you can. But
oh, okay, I'll hang on.
All right, good.
Okay.
If it keeps on raining, let